I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. It's Friday, which means we're tapping into community newspapers and the alternative press for a look at the stories that went under the radar this week. Here with me in Studio 3 are Peter Katsas of The Phoenix, Sue O'Connell representing the South End News and Bay Windows, and John Roush, editor of the JP Gazette and Mission Hill Gazette. Welcome back, everybody.
Thanks.
Hey.
Peter Katsas, we're starting off with you. A big piece by Chris Ferrone looking at these privacy bills that really are being introduced today, January 18th. In essence, if you read this, you just are just totally paranoid because everybody's looking at you from everywhere and collecting information. And these bills maybe would try to curb a little bit of that. Talk to us about the piece.
Right. Well, I think most people would be shocked if they realized how little privacy anyone has in the digital world. I don't think they'd be so shocked if they found out the federal government could snoop on you, because there's a common conception that, you know, it's Big Brother and they're watching you. But I think people would truly be surprised if they knew the degree to which their local police or the state police or any official authority can look into your affairs. For example, there's nothing illegal about going into any online accounts, whether it be Facebook, Twitter, and I don't mean accessing them, you know, via
the
signing
back door.
Up,
yeah. Right.
but going in the back door. Most people don't realize that hundreds of thousands of license plates are scanned every minute, well, every day in Massachusetts, and there's a question about how long should those things be stored. So what has happened up on Beacon Hill is the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, and some state reps have basically taken what Justice Brandeis once said. A lot of people may also
know the
Supreme Court Justice Brandeis made his name as a Boston lawyer. And Brandeis used to preach that the best place to practice social experimentation is at the state level. So with that in mind, a number of measures have been introduced today to try to make us more secure in our personhood. The one that I find the most interesting is the one about license plates.
Yeah.
That there are just locations that, you know, there are these license plate readers that can, you know, do thousands of cars a minute.
And these are not at the toll booths, right? These
no.
are.
No.
You're minding your own business.
Yeah,
yeah.
You're just literally.
And they're just capturing all your information. We've had some conversations here on Boston Public Radio with Kate Crawford, who's been working on this, and she's in fact working to shape this legislation and really scared, you know, me and listeners about thinking about you're just going along and they're capturing it. Not so much that it can be captured, as Peter has said. But the second part of that is how long the information can be stored.
And where it goes.
Yeah. Do you want to add to that, John?
I guess, well, you know, what's interesting to me is that the law is so far behind on this. And, you know, and our conceptions of what our personal papers are. This sort of reminds me, you know, as Peter said, we have this kind of built-in American suspicion of the government and Big Brother. I'm reminded there was a punk rock band that had a great phrase, which Big Brother isn't watching you. We're watching him. They meant television and kind of getting sucked into entertainment. I think the internet is that way. We give these companies like Google incredible amounts of our information via email and all these integrated services, Google Wallet and YouTube all that information is conglomerated in a very easy to look at fashion, and it can be looked at without a warrant, tons of it. And that's just crazy. I think that just defies our common sense. So that's why some of these things are really interesting. And we don't know where that information goes if it is looked at, the license plates and so
at the
forth.
Same time, how do you define privacy
right.
now? You know, that to me is such – I'll never forget, you know, just a few years ago, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, we had someone applying for a job at Bay Windows, and we did a Google search, and a naked picture of them came up. And I said, well, who would, you know, let a naked picture of themselves off on the internet? And a lot of the staff just turned around and went, well, we all have, you know. If everyone has naked pictures out there, it ceases to be an issue, you know. So it's sort of like, well, what is private? If you are on Facebook, you know, talking about your medical issues, your health issues, job issues, things that our parents would be horrified that we were talking about outside of the home, you know. I don't know what privacy is anymore, and I don't even know how to begin to define it.
One thing that privacy is, for example, political groups being mm-hmm. able to meet and with the reasonable expectation of privacy. And
but what is the reasonable expectation of privacy?
It turns out that the Boston police, have been spying on, mm-hmm. you know, this is shades of the 1960s, radical groups or mm-hmm. suspect groups. I mean, some of these are old mm-hmm. questions.
Mm-hmm. Old questions.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I know. I agree. I mean, and Chris makes the point that it has been known, or a lot of people knew, that the Occupy protesters, for example, were surveyed, and that, you know, much was made of who they were, and that information was sent around. And to your question about what is privacy now, and also we're in a whole new day and age, a lot of people, the same person that put the naked picture of him on his, online, would say, well, I know all this kind of information is out there. I put it out there. I'm not worried about that. But that same person may not be quite so comfortable with, I'm minding my own business, driving around in a car. I've not, you know, done anything. You've collected that information, and now it sits in a database with other folks who may have done something. The assumption is, you know, I have too, but yet I haven't. So that's when it gets, mm-hmm. you know, some clarity needs to be happening along lines of, all right, how long are you keeping this? And what does the file look like? Mm-hmm. And who accesses this? And what do they think when they access
that
file?
And who controls it? Do I control it?
That's right.
Well, that's the key thing. Yeah. If I can take down my own naked picture, that's my, you know, put it up, take it down. If somebody else is in control or filing it,
you know,
it's different.
Question of the fingerprinting teachers also brought this issue up, that, you know, it not only is an intrusion, but it also can lead to a lot of misinformation, a lot of waste time. You know, if your license plate is not scanned properly and somebody was involved in a crime and then they investigate you, more information is not necessarily the best.
Well, that's true. So Chris is saying in his piece that I guess it's called the Electronic Privacy Act that passes, that federal investigators will still have warrantless access to your digital trail. So we should be clear, because you started off with your comments, Peter, making it clear that Maybe we knew about federal, but we didn't know about what's going on locally. And there should be some other bars with regard to how this is going to come down, even as we all sit here and try to figure out where the line is. So Cade Crockford, who is working with the ACLU, is trying to draw some lines. And I think it's a good discussion for people to engage in and figure out where their legislators are falling as these bills come up before them. Mm-hmm. We are talking with Peter Katsas, executive editor of The Phoenix, Sue O'Connell, co-publisher of Bay Windows and the South End News, and John Roosh, editor of the Mission Hill Gazette and JP Gazette. And this is Boston Public Radio's Local Under the Radar Review, Weekend Review. We've just finished talking about these Beacon Hill privacy laws that were introduced today. So I'm heading over to you, John Roosh, to talk about an interesting proposal for a neighborhood council in the Northeastern University area. And this grows out, you should give us the background, of some long simmering tension there between Northeastern University and the community.
Northeastern University, you know, evolving from a commuter school to one of the top local universities and expanding as it does so, and with some friction with the neighborhoods around it, to say the least, including, you know, students living off campus in the neighborhoods and just simply, you know, expanding the campus into the neighborhoods. Right now, the university is wrapping up its 10-year master plan for its next decade of expansion and development and so forth, and that's been very controversial in Mission Hill and all the other communities around the campus. To kind of keep the conversations going, John Tobin, who is Northeastern's vice president for community affairs, has proposed creating a Northeastern University Neighborhood Council, he calls it, which would have obviously Northeastern people on it, but also representatives of each neighborhood around it to talk about any sort of town and gown issues. It's a very, you know, kind of sketchy proposal right now. He wants to make it more formal come springtime. But it's pretty intriguing. It's not something the university has to do at all. John Tobin's a former Boston City Councilor. He knows that he has a huge can of worms here that he is cranking wide open. it seems like a really productive, intriguing idea. So, and I suspect people are going to take him up on it.
And we should say this is against the backdrop of a what so-called master plan to expand Northeastern University into the community. There's been a lot of tension about that, people feeling like they haven't been kept in the loop or feeling as though there were some sort of up-on-high decisions made by the university without regard to the impact of the community. So the fact that coming from the university is an outreach – looks like it would be a good thing.
Yeah, I lived in Mission Hill during the 90s, you know, when Northeastern was beginning their expansion, when the dormitory was built right down on Huntington and Parker Street, I think, or Parker Hill Ave. And it was outrageous. I mean, it was the change in the neighborhood, you know, where you have a Mission Hill, which I've often characterized as the neighborhood that almost could, you know, that one year after another, it tries to move into a better place in many ways. And then it hits some obstacle. And the change in the neighborhood, when the students started living in the neighborhood and the amount of traffic from the parking garage, the amount of foot traffic, parking, we weren't ready with resident parking. We had many streets that were just, you know, free streets
open,
to park on. And suddenly you had streets filled of cars from the commuters from Northeastern. So it wasn't even like we had time to react to that. So I applaud the idea of having an emissary to go into the neighborhood, because it really, you know, you went from it being a crime issue in Mission Hill to suddenly having frat house parties, and neither one of them was a good thing. So
is this a from the cynical side, and you're usually on that side, Peter, a stealth move by John by Northeastern University to sort of put the cap on some of the grumping about the expansion into the community?
Oh, you know me too well. I would actually go farther than that. I would say that it suggests to me that most of the key decisions and key deals have already been struck. So it's now okay to bring the great unwashed in. And I'm working sort of down the street, working from downtown Boston, you know, the Christian Science Complex, which has been largely overlooked. That's one of the central locuses for the university expanding its classroom and administrative footprint. And there was a small but hearty group of architectural activists who were trying to make sure that the architectural integrity of that stark but lovely space be kept free. So it makes me think that the fix has already been in. However, having said that and observed that cynically, I still think it is a good idea. You know, it probably won't work forever because there'll be community tensions within. But, you know, I think as a transitional move, that's not a bad idea. I know Tobin pretty well. He was always a stand-up guy as a city councilor. And by the way, I'm not suggesting he's in on any of the fixes. I think it's between the BRA, the mayor's office, and the president's office.
But even if it's a
By the way, I'm not saying the fix is just some awful, terrible thing.
Right.
I just think that the broad contours of the plan have already been agreed.
But they may be presenting an A or a B. You can have this or that, or let's plan on resident parking.
Just knowing who to go to.
Well, that is a good point, because that's frustrating when you're trying to respond to or interact with a big, huge entity like Northeastern University. John Rusci, you were about to say?
Well, just as important context, the plan has been finalized and issued for their 10-year master plan. So this is like you could easily be viewed as too little, too late. The community has been involved in creating that plan through a task force, a BRA task force. Obviously, there's still dispute as to the quality of that process. The task force will continue meeting as well. But so this is what's interesting. The task force theoretically keeps meeting forever. But, you know, people don't really do that for 10 years and they drop off and so forth. So this is a way to sort of have a parallel process that's even more open. It can address anything. It can be open to addressing anything. So it is too little too late in the sense of the plan's already done for sure. And
so
Peter
no
raises an interesting question
plans.
As to how much momentum will it have, and can do the neighborhoods themselves want to hang together that much, or they have their own different perspectives as well.
So there's no changing of the plan. It's understanding how we all live together within the context of the plan being finalized.
primarily. Yeah,
okay. Well, that's
so, yeah.
It's not a small thing.
No,
right,
not,
right.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
And the other good thing is, you know, Tito Jackson represents a lot of that area. Mm-hmm. Tito's a very, you know, on the ball with its city councilor with
and
a
Mike
lot
Ross
of integrity.
The, mm-hmm.
Mike
yeah.
Ross, too. So, you know, I think the residents are, I think the residents there are probably in better hands than the residents in Alston now with Harvard, mm-hmm. for example. Mm-hmm.
That's
for
sure. Very true. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we're going over the week's local news that went under the radar with Peter Katsas of the Phoenix, John Roush of the JP Gazette and the Mission Hill Gazette, and Sue O'Connell representing the South End News and Bay Windows. We got much more. The conversation continues on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.